Sentiments are growing over the regime's war on Gaza. Thank you for joining us. In today's top story, Israeli bombs raining down on the besieged Gaza Strip for the 14th day in a row, leaving a trail of death and destruction in the blockaded territory. The latest Israeli airstrikes killed three Palestinians in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza Strip, adding to the 20 killed there earlier on Friday. Dozens have also been injured. The death toll from the two-week aggression is now over 4,100, with more than 1,000 people missing. Meanwhile, the UN chief has visited the Rafah border crossing between Egypt and the Gaza Strip in a bid to get aid flowing into the besieged Palestinian territory.
So these trucks are not just trucks. They are a lifeline. They are the difference between life and death for so many people in Gaza. And to see them stuck here makes me be very clear. What we need is to make them move. To make them move to the other side of this wall. To make them move as quickly as possible and as many as possible.
Guterres said trucks carrying international aid for Gaza should be rolling in the next day or so. Some 175 lorries filled with vital medicine, food and water are awaiting at the Rafah crossing. Israel has cut off the supply of electricity, water, fuel and medicines into the territory, and according to the Gaza's Ministry of Health, seven main hospitals are now out of service. The UN says more than 1 million of Gaza's 2.3 million people are displaced, with the humanitarian situation beyond catastrophic and deteriorating daily. The Hamas resistance movement says it has released two American women that were taken captive in the Gaza Strip. Hamas's military wing, the Qassam Brigades, says the mother and a daughter were released for humanitarian purposes. The group spokesman, Abu Ubaida, says the move proves to Americans and the world that claims by U.S. President and his administration are false and baseless. Abu Ubaida says they are also considering the release of other captured foreigners. Hamas officials earlier said nearly 200 people were taken captive during Operation Al-Aqsa flood on October 7th. These include high-ranking Israeli military officials. Hamas has suggested the captives could be swapped for 6,000 Palestinians held in Israeli prisons. Leila Khaled, one of the iconic faces of the Palestinian resistance, gave an interview to Press TV. She is a member of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. Leila joined the struggle for the liberation of Palestine in her 20s. She is now in her late 70s and is still fighting against the Israeli occupation through her activism. Let's listen to what she says.
No, the Israelis from Munich, they occupied Palestine in 19 also after 1967. The resistance was there, direct. Even my woman, the women in Palestine, they were not starving. They are putting explosives, at the stations, and they were sentenced for life. Of course, every action should use on the tactics to promote the revolution, to be nearer to liberation. So in every era of the struggle, you have tactics and you have the strategy. Then in 1987, the Intifada broke out. This is a new stage of our revolution. that the people went to streets to face the army with all its weapons, but our children were facing also the army of Israel. And it took about 6 years. Unfortunately, the leadership of PLO, led by Arafat, went to negotiations. We were against that. But he was supported by the Arabs also to go for the negotiations and to sign an Oslo Accords afterwards. This now, we ended up with the Intifada, who raised the slogan freedom and independence. And if it went back, and if Arafat and his allies, we could have done that, because the army began to shake, the Israeli army. They are following children. Some of them committed suicide. But it was a historical intifada. Even the word intifada was in all languages intifada. Nobody changed it. And that was also another era of liberation movement.
Palestinian resistance groups have launched more attacks against Israel in retaliation for the regime's bombardment of the Gaza Strip. The military wing of Hamas resistance movement, the Izzeddin al-Qassam Brigade, launched missiles at the city of Tel Aviv. Israeli military positions in East Al-Quds were also targeted. Hamas had previously stated that it can target anywhere in the Israeli territories. Palestinian resistance fighters entered the Gaza envelope area on October 7th following missile strikes on Israeli targets under the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. At least 1,500 Israelis have been killed and nearly 5,000 injured since then. Hamas says it launched a military campaign in response to repeated Israeli desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the regime's crimes and aggression throughout the decades. People across the globe have held demonstrations in a show of support for Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Pro-Palestinian protesters took to the streets of the capital Sana'a, condemning Israel for its crimes and calling for international action to stop the onslaught in Gaza. People in Baghdad held a rally as well, slamming Washington's support for Tel Aviv. Protesters in Morocco also expressed solidarity with Palestinians. Iranians filled the streets in different cities, including the capital Tehran and the holy city of Mashhad. Similar rallies were held in dozens of other cities across the globe, with demonstrators demanding an immediate end to Gaza siege and a stop to the aggression.
Mother, the symbol of love and peace, she cannot stay at home and be a bystander when she sees the disturbing images of murdered children. So, Iranian mothers with their children gathered at Mother's Square in Tehran to express sympathy with Palestinian mothers and children. They say that the only thing they can do today is to come to the streets and be the voice of the oppressed.
We have witnessed heartbreaking scenes in the past few days, such as children waking up to find their homes destroyed and searching for their mothers. During these moments, all we could do was cry. Perhaps these gatherings can help awaken public conscience and draw the world's attention to Gaza.
I asked her why she has brought her daughter to this gathering.
I brought my daughter because I think that from this age, she should be able to develop a sense of sympathy so that when she reaches adulthood, she will not be indifferent to what is happening in the world.
I asked her how she felt about the recent events in Palestine as a mother. Tears welled up in her eyes.
We have come here today to support the Palestinian people who are being martyred. We cannot watch our brothers and sisters in Gaza being unjustly martyred and remain indifferent.
I know it was my duty to come here to sympathize with Palestinian children. I cannot imagine what is happening to Palestinian mothers. It is very sad.
Today, mothers around the world play a significant role in teaching their children about the Palestinian cause.
Iran's foreign minister has compared the atrocities committed by the Israeli regime to those carried out by primitive terrorist groups such as Daesh. Hossein Amir Abdullahian condemned the Israeli bombing of Greek Orthodox Gaza Church, where at least 500 Muslims and Christians were taking shelter. At least 16 people were reportedly killed. Amir Abdullahian said Israeli aggression, desecration of divine religions, and attacks on humanity's cultural and historical heritage echo terrorist actions. Israel has a long history of bombing religious and civilian infrastructure. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says it has targeted three Israeli bases with precision-guided munitions. In a statement, Hezbollah said the strikes took place in Kafr Shuba and Shawa Farms region. It said all the strikes hit the designated targets. This came after Israel carried out attacks on southern Lebanon. The area has witnessed exchanges of fire since the 8th of October, a day after a major Palestinian operation against Israel. The recent clashes between Israeli forces and Hezbollah fighters have left over a dozen people dead. Earlier on Friday, Israel said it will evacuate the town of Kiryat Shemona near the Lebanese border. Pro-Palestinian protests are in full swing across the globe amid growing anti-Israel sentiments over the regime's deadly war on the blockaded Gaza Strip. Our correspondent has filed us the following reports.
Pakistan has dispatched a 100-ton aid package to Gaza, which is reeling from Israel's relentless bombing. The humanitarian assistance includes medicine, tents, and blankets, which has been sent to Egypt through a chartered aircraft late on Thursday. According to Pakistan's Foreign Affairs Ministry, the supplies will then be transferred to the people of Gaza from Egypt.
Israel's actions violate international humanitarian and human rights law. Deliberate attacks against civilian targets constitute war crimes and crimes against humanity. We call for an immediate ceasefire, an end to the siege of Gaza, and the facilitation of humanitarian corridors for unrestricted relief supplies.
Meanwhile, in a show of solidarity with the Palestinian people, Pakistani President Arif Alvi visited the Palestinian embassy in Islamabad and met with its ambassador, Ahmad Jawad Rabbai. The president assured the Palestinian envoy that Islamabad will continue its unconditional moral and diplomatic support for the people of Palestine.
We condemn what the brutalities which are happening in Gaza. We condemn the disproportionate reaction which Israel has always done. We condemn the apartheid which has stood there for the last 30, 40 years. We condemn the fact that people are being brutalized, people are being killed. In fact, the Al-Ahli hospital in Gaza was demolished and more than 500 people died there.
Meanwhile, protest against Israeli aggression continues in Pakistan as thousands of people took to the streets to condemn the ongoing violence in the Gaza Strip.
Pakistan's decision to help Palestine despite facing international pressures demonstrates its moral commitment to the welfare and self-determination of the Palestinian people. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Members of the Islamic movement in Nigeria held a peaceful protest after Friday prayers at the National Mosque in the capital, Abuja. The demonstrators chanted slogans condemning the Israeli attacks on Gaza, which has resulted in the killing of thousands of Palestinians. They further condemned the Western refusal to call for a ceasefire and the support that the United States and European countries give to the Israelis. The demonstrators say they fully support the Palestinians.
The Islamic movement has been calling for justice for the Palestinians for more than four decades. It's not just now that the Islamic movement started. The Islamic movement started from the beginning. It's one of the frontiers of calling for justice.
Free, free Palestine!
The demonstrators express solidarity with the people of Palestine, but regretted that many people still do not understand the motives of the Israelis, who have continued to oppress the Palestinians for several decades. They explain that the occupation of Palestinian lands and the systematic murder of innocent people, including women and children, is part of a grand plan of the Zionists.
Some people are still saying Israelis are acting on defense. What defense? Yesterday, if you feel they are killing Muslims, yesterday they went and destroyed a church of 1,600 years.
Meanwhile, Muslim organizations under the Supreme Council for Sharia in Nigeria have condemned Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip. They also called on the Nigerian government to urgently review its relations with the regime. Danjum Abdullahi, Abuja.
And with that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for being with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
According to new data, one Palestinian child is killed every 15 minutes in Gaza by the Zionist regime forces. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Gaza's morgues and hospitals continue to overflow with casualties. Defense for Children International Palestine said recently that Israeli regime forces have been killing a Palestinian child approximately every 15 minutes in Gaza since October 7th. Mohammed Abu Rokba, a field researcher for the children's rights groups in Gaza, said that the psychological repercussions of the Zionist regime war will be catastrophic. The rights group said that the trauma experienced by Palestinian children in Gaza extends beyond personal suffering. Witnessing the deaths of other children compounds their distress, leaving indelible scars on their mental well-being. Defense for Children International Palestine added, entire families are being wiped out in the blink of an eye, shattering the very foundations of these households. Children have been left orphaned and will now grapple not only with the pain of the current situation in their city, but also with the daunting challenge of navigating life without the foundational support of their families. The number of fatalities in Gaza may grow not only from more Zionist regime bombing, but also as a result of the comprehensive siege imposed on the territory, where almost no food, water, fuel, electricity or humanitarian supplies has been allowed in for more than a week. Hospitals are about to run out of fuel to power generators, according to the UN, endangering the lives of thousands of patients. Meanwhile, there is an imminent risk of death or infectious disease outbreak with the collapse of virtually all water and sanitation services in Gaza. As many as 1 million people, around half the population of Gaza, one of the most densely populated areas on the planet, are internally displaced, with many people moving from the northern Gaza to the south after the Zionist regime ordered its evacuation ahead of a threatened ground invasion. The Committee to Protect Journalists said recently that at least 15 journalists were among thousands dead since the war began on October 7th. The Press Freedom Watchdog said that freelance journalist Salam Memo is among the 11 Palestinian journalists killed in Gaza during that period. Her body was recovered from the rubble 3 days after her home was hit in an Israeli regime airstrike in Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza on October 10th. Shawan Jabarin, the director of the Palestinian human rights group Al-Haq, called for an international independent investigation. Speaking from Ramallah, Jabarin condemned the EU and the US for facilitating the Zionist regime's aggression on the civilian population in Gaza, which he said reached the threshold for the crime of genocide. Jabarin urged third states to pressure the Zionist regime to allow the UN Independent Commission of Inquiry to enter and investigate all crimes committed regardless of the perpetrators. The Zionist regime continued to target residential buildings in its non-stop bombardment of Gaza. Recently, Palestinians are, meanwhile, rationing whatever food, water and cooking gas they still have. Mohammad Gunim, a doctor at Gaza's Al-Shifa Hospital, said that the current aggression in Gaza is like none other that people there had gone through before, and that the overwhelming number of casualties being received at the hospital are civilians. He said, "The most difficult aspect is writing a number on the body of an injured child because their identity is not known." He warned of additional casualties if hospitals, which are being powered by emergency generators, run out of fuel. Meanwhile, hundreds of people were sheltering at Al-Shifa Hospital, the largest health facility in Gaza. Meanwhile, CNN reported that the United States was sending 2,000 Marines and sailors to join the warships it has already sent to the Eastern Mediterranean. The Biden administration has put on a big show of seemingly unconditional solidarity for the Zionist regime and has demonized Palestinians and parroted Israeli propaganda to manufacture consent for the genocidal campaign underway in Gaza. Recently, Blinken made a joint appearance with the Israeli regime war minister Yoav Gallant, who called Palestinians in Gaza human animals when declaring a complete siege on their territory. Gallant said that this will be a long war, the price will be high, but we are going to win for Israel and the Jewish people and for the values that both countries believe in. Behind the scenes, U.S. officials are reportedly pressuring the Zionist regime to determine an end game. The Biden administration is surely aware that the situation could rapidly escalate and embroil the United States in a broader regional war that will cost more American lives, as Sam Heller and Cambinas state in an analysis for the Century Foundation. Biden said in an interview broadcast recently that Israel taking full control of Gaza again would be a mistake.
Food for thought. Hello, everyone. Let us reflect on a wonderful maxim from Imam Hassan Askari, peace be upon him, the 11th infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. The wine drinker is like an idolater for his disobedience of God.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Reformation of the Mind. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We've heard too much about reformation, change, having a transition. What is the true reformation is what we would like to discuss today. Well, first and foremost, the most important pillar for the reformation of individuals is the reformation of their minds. You know, sometimes when we talk about reformation, we're just too confined and too focused to the actions. It is not about actions, necessarily. The real reformation, which reflects in your actions, is the reformation of the mind. Some imagine reformation to be a superficial thing, wherein they just change a few habits and assume that they have reformed themselves. And that this is what reformation is all about. Well, giving up some bad habits is good, but the scope of reformation is not limited and confined to that. The true reformation is the reformation of the mind. Keep this in your mind. Individual level reformation is one thing where, let's say, we don't lie, we don't cheat, we fear Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's disobedience, for instance, we don't go down that route. That's a very individual level reformation. Then the higher level reformation after that is, the second level of reformation is the family level reformation, where you, reform yourself to start respecting your parents, caring for your spouse and your children. The third level is, where you're concerned about the society now. So it is the societal level reformation, supporting the oppressed, for instance, doing charity to uplift the downtrodden, etc. So reformation is not something just, confined to giving up some habits. It's basically a reformation of the mind, right? So this is what we need to keep in mind. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing the reformation of the mind. And we said that reformation does not imply that we just change some habits and keep living a life as we used to. No. Reformation is the reformation of the entire mindset. That is the true reformation. And why should one reform is a question that may come to your mind. Well, the answer is we should reform for the sake of Allah. If man's actions are for the sake of Allah the Almighty and to show obedience to Him, or at least to obtain the reward of the world to come and to be saved from its punishment, they will bring about well-being and felicity in both the worlds for Him.
and he will be fruitful for the society. On the contrary, if his actions are only for material goals, they will not have elevated results. You know, sometimes we see that we bring about reformation, but it is for this dunya, for some dunyavi and for this worldly benefits that we want to reap through that superficial reformation. Well, guess what? If you reform yourself, if I reform myself, if we reform ourselves for the sake of Allah, then it guarantees our benefits in this world and our salvation in the hereafter as well. Reformation impacts your decision-making. The decision-making of an individual can only go through proper reformation if he or she has the proper reformation of the mind. Again, it's not about actions so much. Actions are the result of the reformation of one's mind. So inshallah, let's try to change that mindset, reform that mindset for good, for the sake of Allah, based on the instructions provided to us by Allah, His Prophet, and infallible Imams.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Horrendous atrocities on Palestinian soil.
Part 2.
On the eve of July 9, 2014, the first Israeli aerial bombardment took place in what is considered the high-class neighborhood of Al-Rimal in Gaza City. The target of the raid was an automobile carrying a sign that read press on it and driven by journalist Hamid Shahab with co-worker Hatim Selmi at his side. They had stopped by Hatim's home to briefly check on his family, whom he had not seen in a while. Shahab remained in the car outside. A minute or two later, while Hatim was with his family, a missile hit their home, and Hamid Shahab lost his partner.
I was at the office working for the fourth day in a row without going home. I went then, returned home, had a bath, and changed my clothes. I saw my family, but decided not to see my mother as I knew she would become too emotional. You know how mothers get after their sons are away for a while. Hamid phoned me to say he was coming to my home. I went to the balcony to watch for him, but he said he couldn't see me. He told me he was entering the street, and I was looking down both sides to find him. He entered from the Kazim area, from the opposite lane, because he was coming from Al-Sabra neighborhood. So he said he is now in the street, and I told him I saw him and ended the call. I was going downstairs. My mother was there, and she commented that she had not seen me in a while and that she missed me. I was touched and moved back to kiss her hands and head, and I was about to hold my brother's hand when there was a huge explosion.
It was Ramadan, and we were leaving the mosque after Taraweeh prayers. We sat with my cousins and a few uncles next to a press vehicle. Another car parked behind us to pick up Hatim Selmi, a journalist who was upstairs.
Wukfatan, Sayara.
The driver's mobile rang, and the next thing I was aware of, we all woke up at the hospital.
I held one victim in my arms, but he was lifeless. I moved to the next, and they too were dead. Then another and another. I wanted to work my way through those that died so that I may find someone alive to rescue. The injured I could help. The driver was nowhere to be found. The car was unrecognizable. The explosion was so severe. I searched for the driver, but found nothing until a first aid officer found his legs and half of his abdomen. The car suffered a direct hit. It was indeed the target. I imagined myself sitting next to him when the explosion occurred, cut to ribbons, dying together as martyrs.
As the war on Gaza continued, the targeting of journalists too continued and escalated. Israeli occupational forces assassinated 6 journalists, all in 1 month, prompting many other journalists to go into hiding.
I would often warn him, but he always insisted on venturing out to film and record the truth for the world to see. It was in his blood, and he worked passionately day and night. The only time you knew he was alive was when he would call and tell us he is in a certain place and safe.
He would film the martyrs and help carry the injured on his searching to find them all. He used to come home asking about me and my day. He hid his blood-stained clothes from me because he knows I have high blood pressure and diabetes. He didn't want me to feel upset.
Rami was very courageous. Whenever I saw him putting on his helmet and vest, I would ask, "Where are you going?" He would say he was going to do his job and show the truth to the world. I reminded him that we have young children that need their father. But he always said, what's meant to happen will happen. We can't lock him in a room.
Rami Ryan did not respond to calls from his parents and wife to stay home and not cover the war and go out in search of crimes being committed by the Israeli aggressors. Rami is a photographer and an only son. He is married with 4 children, and his job supports them all, the whole family. Rami's family, like other families of journalists, worried incessantly every time a bombing or massacre occurred. It was a traumatic time for all.
I had my child Rami after 14 years of marriage. I spoiled and doted upon him as he was my only son. He married after high school and had 2 girls and 2 boys. I always scolded him, saying he is an only son and all would be lost if someone were to knock on my door and tell me something happened to him. May he rest in peace. He never listened to me. His work was a message he had to deliver. Even if the price was his blood, he was prepared to die for the cause.
I found him in his last days. He was away so much, and I told him that he needs to come home and spend time with his children, as they missed him so. He promised to come home early that night, and he did come, and we ate dinner together. He showed us some of what he had filmed, horrible scenes from his trips accompanying the PRCS as they evacuated displaced people from Ashajaiya.
The last time I saw him, I was in afternoon prayer and he was about to leave. I raised my voice saying, Allahu Akbar, to make him wait. Then he came to the window side and waited. Once I finished my prayers, I told him that his kids are still young and that because of the risk he was taking, that one day he would die in the blink of an eye. He told me that Allah will look after them and told me that if I locked him in a box, he would die. So it's better that he lives as he was meant to. I told him that he exhausted me with worry, but that he's also right in what he said.
One day, Rami journeyed out to cover a massacre in Al-Shajaiya neighborhood. His photos taken at the site were the last images he ever took. Scores of rockets and missiles rained down on the same area after the initial massacre, and Rami was martyred.
The incident of entering and killing and murdering
Rami Rayyan in Ash-Shaja'iyya neighborhood when the Israeli occupation forces targeted the market, killing with the deceased Rami more than 17 people from Ash-Shaja'iyya neighborhood. That was another evidence that our job is full of risks and that our life is at the stake, but that also that surprised us, but that also made us determined that we are the guards of the truth.
Rami's family lost their son, husband, father, and sole breadwinner. The only consolation for the family members is that Rami died exposing the truth, embedded in the photographs he took of the massacres and other crimes committed against the Palestinian people.
May he rest in peace. He has been martyred, which is a privilege. Praise the Lord that he was chosen. He was a kind-hearted and a good man. There is nothing worse, though, than when a child asks you, "Where is her father?" You might answer that he's in paradise, but then the child says, "When it rains, Dad will get wet, and so he should come here to stay warm with us." You answer that it won't rain on him, as the Lord protects him in paradise, where he has everything.
The war in Gaza lasted for 51 days. By the end, dozens of journalists had been killed or injured, witnesses to Israel's great loss over its battle to monopolize and control media exposure, which severely damaged its reputation on the world stage, witnesses to the success of Palestinian resistance in the face of one of the largest and most technologically advanced armies in the world today.
Here there are seven martyrs and about 30 wounded. Of the wounded, some have permanent disabilities. In every war by Israeli aggression, there's a great sacrifice from the Palestinian media sector, and I can tell you that we have no problem in giving our souls freely to expose the hellish barbarism of the Zionist regime.
We have lost in this war 18 brothers from the family of the press in Gaza. If journalists didn't put their lives on the line to expose Israel's crimes, if they did not succeed in this mission to be the messengers of the occupied peoples, then they would have not been targeted by the Israeli army. I think the Palestinian press succeeded in their endeavors that shows their love for their homeland.
There was a distant challenge this time in that the Palestinian media became a serious counterweapon versus the Western-dominated Israeli media and narrative. We were able to refute their narrative of lies and manipulation of the truth this time. They overrode our signal, but we broadcasted from other stations. When Al Shahab radio station was targeted, the Al Quds station was saying, "Here is Al Shahab voice from the studios of Al Quds station." When Watan and Al-Aqsa stations were targeted, we said we were their voice. We made it clear if they targeted one studio that the whole Gaza radio network would all be the voice for Al-Quds or Al-Shaab or any other Palestinian station attacked. We think we succeeded in this battle to make the truth in war prevail and to successfully counter many of the lies broadcasted as Israeli propaganda.
Even if a war erupted right now, we will still continue our work. For instance, I'm from the neighborhood of Beit Hanun, where almost every family has been displaced. My family stayed initially in a collective center. Our house was targeted, and thirdly, my place of work at Al-Watania Media was taken out by a missile. It took me just 4 hours to get back to my duties. Every journalist is subject to risks, just as the families and the thousands of children displaced. I didn't see my family for 52 days. Even when injured, I kept on working. Palestinian journalists are fierce workers in their dedication to expose the occupation in all its aspects.
Almost immediately after the war came to an end, media personnel returned to their offices to work, and staff of the destroyed networks found new premises to set up in and continue their brave cause.
As soon as the radio station was bombed by an Israeli airstrike, we were back in the saddle coming up with ways to get back on air reporting events. Even with the loss of the archive and the old premises of Al-Shaab, we started working and thinking of how to revive our efforts despite the sustained risks. Nothing will stop us from our path to serve the Palestinian cause.
Al-Aqsa radio station represented the resistant media, a voice that will never run out of means to continue. We have infinite alternatives and options that the enemy is not even aware of. Our signals will never be permanently ended. With Allah's will, we will return to the airwaves, always, one time more than we are knocked down.
They may have killed or deported journalists, but their pictures are immortal witnesses to all the horrendous atrocities committed by the Israeli occupation on Palestinian soil.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
EU's most powerful members squabble over subsidies. There are reports that Germany and France can't agree on funding for nuclear energy. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Bloomberg, France and Germany have failed to find a compromise over the amount of government funding that should be allocated to extending the life of nuclear reactors. Germany rejected the latest proposal to overhaul the European Union's power market over fears that France could use it to unfairly benefit its nuclear industry and undercut prices across the bloc. Time is running out for the two countries, the EU's largest economies, to resolve their dispute over the role of nuclear power in Europe's energy transition, or risk stalling the region's green agenda. According to RT, the dispute over how to use state-backed two-way CFDs, or contracts for differences for nuclear risks, is stalling the region's green agenda, as the chances of a deal that would scale up renewable power rest on agreement between the two nations. So far, Germany has completely phased out nuclear energy, while France is heavily dependent on its aging atomic power plants for generating electricity. Last year, nuclear energy accounted for 63% of France's total electricity production. RT added, Paris has claimed that some EU member states are trying to diminish the role of nuclear power during the transition. Agnès Pannier-Runacher, France's energy transition minister, said, what some are trying to do is to structurally degrade the competitiveness of nuclear power to the benefit of the renewables. France's energy minister said, as cited by Bloomberg, adding, we can't end up with zero-sum game. Meanwhile, Germany has raised concerns that France could use the latest proposal to overhaul the bloc's power market to unfairly benefit its nuclear sector and undercut prices across the region.
Robert Habeck, Germany's economy minister, said the result for me is very disappointing. If we can't agree on a level playing field for existing installations, then Germany can't vote for this proposal. Time is running out for the two economic powerhouses to resolve their spats over the issue. As a deadline to complete the task before next year's EU parliamentary elections is rapidly approaching. Meanwhile, Politico reported France and Germany remain at odds over the EU's plan to overhaul rules on government spending, making a bloc-wide deal by the end of the year still look some way off. Sparks flew between EU finance ministers when they discussed the matter in Luxembourg recently. The meeting ended without any sign of breaking the stalemate. The European Commission has made a priority of reforming the Stability and Growth Pact, designed to ensure governments don't accumulate too much debt or maintain too high a deficit. Reaching an agreement between the EU's 27 countries is urgent because the rules will be reapplied from the next year after being suspended at the onset of the COVID pandemic. While there is agreement on the broad outline of the reform and on the need to conclude it before the Commission's mandate ends next year, the exact nature of the overhaul remains in dispute, with Paris and Berlin at opposite ends of the agreement. At the behind-closed-doors meeting, finance ministers vented their frustration. Germany's Christian Lindner expressed dissatisfaction with the fact his demands were not reflected in the Spanish presidency's proposed compromise text when Italian requests were taken on board. Spanish finance minister Nadia Calviño, who was chairing the meeting, replied with laughter, according to two EU diplomats briefed on the talks. Politico added the Stability and Growth Pact is aimed at keeping government debt at or reducing it to 60% of GDP and maintaining annual deficits within 3% of GDP. Germany wants a safeguard, a minimum speed of debt reduction, and a benchmark to keep deficits below that level. A number of countries, including Austria, Finland, Czech Republic, Lithuania, Latvia, the Netherlands, Portugal, Sweden and Slovakia, also raised the need to ensure debt sustainability. German Finance Minister Christian Lindner told reporters before the meeting, "It is not credible to see lower debt levels without sustainable annual deficits. We have a reference of 3% of GDP, but this is not the target. This is the limit." He wants a safety margin for countries to keep deficits in check. The main point of this agreement is how quickly excess debt should be slashed by countries above the 60% debt-to-GDP threshold and how much deficit should be constrained. France is resisting a focus on reducing annual spending. French Finance Minister Bruno Le Maire told reporters before the meeting, "It's absolutely key to focus on one single element on which we could try to find a compromise. My proposal is to really focus on the question of debt sustainability." Midstream.
They were on their way to flee, to escape death from the northern Gaza Strip, but the Israeli entity warjets intercepted their way and launched a violent bombardment on them, leading to the death of at least 70 civilians in one moment. The Israeli occupation advised the Gazans to flee to the south of the Gaza Strip to ensure their escape from the raids. But what actually happened was that Zionist bombs and missiles accompanied the Gazans along the way. Until the writing of this report, the number of Palestinian martyrs from the Israeli occupation bombing of the Gaza Strip has reached 2,200 martyrs, while the number of wounded reached 8,800, most of whom are women and children. What is currently happening is a war of annihilation against Gaza in front of the world, which is doing absolutely nothing to stop it. The Palestinian Ministry of Health announced recently that during the past 10 days, since the start of its aggression against Gaza, the Israeli occupation has exterminated more than 55 Palestinian families, completely annihilated them to a point that their names have been erased from official records. Israeli anti-tank warplanes have been continuously hammering the Gaza Strip neighborhood by neighborhood, reducing buildings to rubble and sending people scrambling to find safety in the tiny, sealed-off territory. Humanitarian groups pleaded for the creation of corridors to get aid into Gaza and warned that hospitals overwhelmed with wounded people were running out of supplies. However, the Zionist Israeli entity has stopped entry of food, fuel, and medicine into Gaza, and the sole remaining access from Egypt was completely shut down after airstrikes hit the border crossing. Rescue officials in Gaza said large numbers of people are still trapped under the remnants of leveled buildings, with rescue equipment and ambulances unable to reach the area. Just take a look at this for a minor example. A large part of Gaza City's Rimal neighborhood was reduced to rubble after hours of airstrikes. Residents found buildings torn in half or demolished to mounds of concrete and rebar. Cars were flattened and trees burned out on residential streets transformed into moonscapes. Rimal, an upscale district home to government ministries, universities, media organizations, and aid agency offices, all now completely flattened. There is no safe place in Gaza right now. You see decent people being killed every day. It could have been you had you been born in Palestine. But it seems the luxury of being considered a valuable human life, not having to sleep, not knowing if you will ever wake up, has led you into narcotizing dysfunction, completely numb to all the horrors committed by Zionist Israel against the Palestinian people. However, rest assured, the Palestinian resistance never forgets the blood spilled by its people, and evidently knows perfectly well when to retaliate. Welcome to the Mideast Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. At least 800 Palestinian children have been killed by the Israeli military offensive on Gaza until the writing of this report, representing one-third of the death toll, with casualty count rapidly rising as the Israeli authorities seal Palestinians in Gaza off from food, fuel, electricity, water, and medical supplies. Now, Israeli regime official statements combined with widespread and systematic attacks carried out by the Israeli occupation forces in the Gaza Strip raise extreme concern that this is now a campaign of genocide against the Palestinian people. To discuss this issue with us from the West Bank is Dr. Amal Wahdan, who is a human rights advocate. Thanks a million for being with us, Dr. Amal Wahdan. Now, the humanitarian situation in Gaza has deteriorated to an unprecedented, dangerous level, with a dire need for the necessity of opening a humanitarian corridor to deliver aid to the people of the Gaza Strip. Why is the international community, Dr. Amal, completely deaf, mute to these atrocities?
Actually, the international community is deaf and blind. They cannot hear the cries of children and women, and they cannot see the TV screens that shows the human catastrophe in Gaza, which is beyond any imagination. 2 million Palestinian civilians living in an area of only 375 square meters are left without food, water, electricity, and medicine supplies and medical supplies for almost 10 days today. The Israelis have refused to let any aid coming from the Egyptian crossing at Rafah City in the south. They also refused any ceasefire to allow aid in. They don't care. They want revenge. This is called collective punishment and was considered as grave violation of international law and international humanitarian law and also human rights. So these countries, what we call the international communities, which is led by the U.S. and its satellite states, actually violate human rights or human rights all over the world, now especially in Gaza Strip. They cannot see what the Israelis, what atrocities the Israelis are committing against our people in Gaza, and also our people in the West Bank, in occupied West Bank. The people of Gaza have been living under siege and open prison for 17 years now. If this is not a concentration camp, what do we call it then? They are.